Let's call this meeting to order. We'll start getting at the synopsis of the new office holders and in the absence of the two people, there's some assignments made. We'll get to the ratification here. Anyway, moving right on. Under the general manager.
I guess that's me, isn't it? Good evening, with commissioners. Tonight's general manager's report, I will start this. With a reminder to please use your microphones whenever you are speaking. And please turn them off when you're not speaking. Starting off as we usually do with a safety moment. And so this one is about preventing the spread of colds in the office, which with the coronavirus and the other things going around is probably good reminders for us all anyways. So starting off with quite simple tips, which maybe should be rules. Start off with number one, take care of yourself. You should all do these things. Sleep, get enough exercise, manage your stress, and eat right. Number two, wash your hands and don't touch your face, just like mom told you. According to the Centers for Disease Control, 80% of disease is spread by touch. Number three, cover your nose and mouth. Don't cough or sneeze into your hands. Use a tissue to prick your elbow. Number four, disinfect surfaces you touch often. Again, wash your hands often. Use disinfectant wipes. And then number five, encourage people who are ill to stay home, including yourself. And offer to back each other up. That usually helps too, to encourage people that aren't feeling well to stay home. So these are the five tips or rules. The internet is full of good information and advice, so there's a few more to think about. A lot of people are fans of getting the flu shot. Keep a geranium at your desk. Evidently, that's a good one. Evidently, crumpled leaves of geraniums release a lot of phytoncides. Phytoncides are the things that plants release to protect themselves against germs and insects and things of that nature, and geraniums have a lot of them. So it might be a good thing to think about. Eating yogurt reduces your risk 25%, and an ionizer. Ionizer probably is the same sort of thing as the phytoncides from a geranium. So anyway, some additional tips there. That's it for tonight's safety minute. Continuing on with the general manager's report. The raw water facilities project permitting updates. The city of Wilsonville completed its review of the land use application package for the raw water facilities project, and we presented the project at the city's development review board meeting on November 25th, 2019. Aside from a slight modification to the conditions of approval, the DRB unanimously approved our application and was posted for public review shortly thereafter. The appeal period expired on December 11th, 2019, and no appeals were received. On December 23rd, 2019, we submitted permit applications for building, grading, mechanical, and plumbing to the city, and for electrical permits to Clackamas County. On December 27th, 2019, we submitted applications to the city for a public works permit and to the Oregon Health Authority for plan review. Overall, the project continues to progress as planned. Progress on our operations and curtailment plans. The current fiscal year annual work plan includes preparing drafts of the operations plan and curtailment plan for the WIF. In November, we completed an annotated outline of the curtailment plan and a list of topics for the operations plan, which will be used to further develop the plan's outline. We appreciate the continued involvement and assistance provided by the staff from all of the WIF parties in preparing these plans. Regarding the Wildland Intake Facilities Insurance Review, renewal, the 2020 renewal of the WIF Property Casualty Insurance has been completed, and the new policy took effect on January 1, 2020. There were no changes to coverage, and the premium was within budget at $19,250. The WIF received a best practices credit that resulted in a $911 savings on its 2020 premium. And finally, quarterly financial reports, Task 4C of the annual work plan requires the managing agency to prepare quarterly financial reports and provide them to the WIF board as part of the packet. Attached to the general manager's report is the WIF quarterly financial statement for the period ending December 31, 2019. Capital outlay for the period is yet to be accounted for in the WIF fund due to ongoing efforts to finalize cost shares for the WWSS and the WIF. Capital outlay for the period is estimated at approximately $267,000 for the period. Once cost shares are finalized, capital outlay will be accounted for, and partner invoices will be processed. And that concludes tonight's general manager's report.
Thank you. At this time, we set the time aside for public comment. Is anybody here that would like to address the commission? Please step forward. Seeing none, hearing none, moving right along. Consent agenda, October 20th meeting minutes is the only item. Entertain a motion.
Move approval.
Second that.
Sorry.
Favor.
Start with it and turn my mic on. Yeah, we have a motion by Commissioner Susie Sansus. Cut you short. And a second by Commissioner Vidas. For approval of the consent agenda, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. All right, I'll tell you the chief to start the meeting about that. Election of officers, according to our bylaws, we're to elect officers on an annual basis. Looking for a show of hands. Yeah, you can nominate it. Jim Dome for chairman?
Yeah.
Okay. John, how about you?
I'm willing to nominate myself if that's possible for a vice chair.
Okay.
I'd happily nominate John for vice chair. Save him the trouble.
Thank you.
Okay, all right. So we have any other? I think this is a good idea, really, because I'd like to see the chairmanship kind of go around the jurisdiction. How might we do with JWC? I don't know if that's something we can look at with the bylaws and make some changes like that, but you know, during the upcoming year, maybe we talk about it and see if it gives any legs on things. Okay, so now we have Jim Dome nominated for chairman, and John Garland nominated for vice chair. Any other comments from the board? Okay, all in favor of the slate as proposed, signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Hearing none. So approved. Somebody, you need to break the news to
more money.
Since he isn't here, I don't know if he's vice chair. Your meeting, buddy.
All right. Expecting to take over your meeting this evening. All right. So moving on to item 4B, recommendation to revise IGA Exhibit 8 budget calendar. Preston?
Yes, just a real brief staff report on this. So the original Exhibit 8 as part of the IGA for the Wildland Intake Facilities Commission provided a lot of time for budget development and review by all the agencies multiple times. We found over, and that served us well, but we found over the last 2 years that we really haven't needed as much time as it's afforded, and in fact it would be beneficial to us to have the initial budget submittal to the committees a little bit later, frankly a month later, to provide for better information for that initial budget deliverable. The other issue that we have with the existing exhibit as drafted, or as it is that it has fixed dates in December 15th, January 15th, and sometimes that's on a Sunday or a holiday or things of that nature. So we have crafted the suggested or recommended revised Exhibit 8 that provides a modification of the dates and also provides some flexibility on exactly by what day we deliver that information on. This exhibit's been reviewed by the Management Committee and the Finance Committee, and all have approved this version. And so with that, I'd be glad to take any questions you might have.
Mr. Vice Chair, I will move that we approve the recommended modification to the budget calendar.
Second?
I'll second.
Any further discussion on that? Shall we take to a vote? All those in favor of recommendation to revise AJ Exhibit 8, budget calendar?
Say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And any opposed? None, that passes. All right, moving on to information items. This one is semi-annual update on the related elements of the WSP World Water Facility project. Mr. Hassan.
Thank you again. So tonight I'll bring you up to date with where we're at with the groundwater facilities project, of which the WIC facilities is a subset of, and walk you through where we stand on that right now. So this is the outline, an overview of the whole project, construction cost update, what our final bank stabilization and debris fence design concepts are, and upcoming scheduled activities. So just a reminder of what the whole site looks like. This is the whole water treatment plant site. Willamette River Water Treatment Plant, the Willamette Treatment Plant Park, the upper site, that's where all the facilities is occurring. The highlighted area there is where the WIF facilities are. Underwater are the screens, and underground is the intake pipe, bringing water back to the caisson pump station there, the square building there in the bank. And again, this is just a reminder of what the intake screens looked like before they were submerged back in 2002, and then the gray intake pipeline there. And again, this is the air burst facilities, the compressors, receiver tanks, and the valves that send the compressed air back to the screens for periodic cleaning. So this is the engineering drawing that shows, this is the final design drawing, frankly, that shows all of the raw water facilities project elements. Then they have different flags. The blue flags are WIF elements, and the purple flags are the WWSP elements. So we start off with the new fish screens. So we'll be installing new screens on the intake. We'll be doing seismic improvements to the caisson and the pump building. We'll be expanding and replacing the air burst system equipment. Mechanical pump station upgrades for the raw water pumps for the water supply system, the raw water pipeline and duct bank. And then all the upper site facilities, electrical buildings, standby power, and surge control. So regarding the construction cost estimate, we are at 90% complete design. We'll be at 100% complete design, I believe, by the end of next month or February, end of February. And the 90% estimate that we received from our construction contractor is $83 million. That includes about $8 million in contingency. That's for the whole raw water facilities project. And that's pretty much in line with our budget estimates. So far, so good. More importantly for this body is that the estimate for the WIF-related elements is trending consistent with previous budget information. So that's the same information that I gave you about 6 months ago. So it's great news that we're staying right and consistent with that. Frankly, the other thing that's a bit stunning to me is that when we executed the WIF IGA 2 years ago, we had written in there in Exhibit 11 values for this, and I'm not anticipating we'll have to modify that exhibit at all. We will be at those numbers or below, unless I get some bad news. But right now, it's looking to be falling exactly where we would be.
Very good.
So as far as the bank stabilization, this is the concept that we've finalized at, and it's a combination of techniques: a jet grouting technique and a deep soil mixing technique. To basically take the soil that's toward the bank up against the caisson and form this pyramidal sort of structure that will hold the caisson in place. And so that sort of improvement will be this shape to hold the caisson in place here, and that'll expand so the raw water pump building is here, the caisson, and you just see most of it in a dashed outline there. And so we have a pretty large block. This bottom, this square or rectangle here is the projection of this shape right here. So essentially, that's what's going to be holding the caisson in place in case there's any lateral spread towards the river. And then we have additional soil improvements over in this area that will be to hold a raw water pipeline in place. And that's why we have these pipeline seismic improvements. So the blue flag is for the soil improvements that are for the caisson. And the purple flag is the soil improvements that are specifically for the pipeline. And when we bid this project, we'll have that work separated out in the bid items so that we're tracking the cost separately. Our debris fence design. So as you remember, the intake screens are underwater, just outside of the bank. And essentially, so the concern there is that during an earthquake, there will be a slumping of the materials from the bank toward the screens. And this is the screen that's designed basically to keep the screens from being buried in the event of an earthquake. And so this will solve that problem there. As far as our schedule goes, we are advertising for bid in early January. We're having a pre-bid and sidewalk in January 28th, so that's coming up tomorrow. Notice to proceed on before June 5th, so we're looking to break ground this summer. 2020 construction activities, so activities this calendar year, mass excavation and grave work, access road to soil improvements, procuring phase one equipment, and starting the caisson pipeline seismic improvements. That's the raw water facilities project upgrade or update. Any questions?
No.
Just a request that when the time is right, maybe we could get an invitation to come down and view the construction in progress.
Absolutely.
Probably when there's a deep hole dug or something like that.
I'll be about a year from now.
All good. Thank you.
Any further questions before we move on to the next item? Seeing none, Mr. Price, back to you with the fiscal year 2020 and 2021 annual work plan and budget preparation.
All right. Thank you again. So this is the time of year when we prepare our annual work plan for the next fiscal year. So we have it prepared in time to present a budget to you for approval at the April meeting. So the intent of this presentation is to show you where we're headed with that annual work plan, what's driving the budgetary numbers, what's being considered by your staff of this annual work plan. And there's one element in particular that I'd like to get your thoughts on as we go through it. So getting into the schedule and the kind of the process that we use for this annual work plan, we developed our initial version of it by the managing agency did back in December, and we delivered that to committees for their initial review. Then we'll be reviewing it with the Finance and Operations Committee, and then the Management Committee, and then delivering it to this body in March for, again, action at the end of the April meeting. So this is the schedule that we just talked about in our Exhibit 8 is for the IGA. And we had our initial delivery back in December 15, and then the preliminary budget was delivered on January 5th. So those parts are done. We'll be revising things according to any comments we received and delivering a draft budget on February 15th to the Management Committee, and then again, the proposed budget at the end of March. So this is the task list that we've always had for our annual work plans for the WIF. No changes there. There's two areas where we anticipate some changes for the next annual work plan for the next fiscal year: general administration and finance administration. So what changes we're anticipating for general administration for the next annual work plan? It'll be further development of the operations plan and the curtailment plan, updating the draft of those two, and preparing a draft of the emergency operations plan. And regarding communications and public outreach with the beginnings of our construction activities down at the Willamette intake facilities, we're expecting to have to do a lot more communication with folks down there, both related to construction traffic and then just our construction activities in general. So expecting an uptick in communication activities. As far as developing our plans, this is the schedule that we presented some time ago when we're executing according to our schedule. Right now, we're in the middle of our current fiscal year, and so we're still in that area of drafting our plans and moving forward from left to right. So one element that we're adding to this annual work plan that we didn't have before is this one, that we're looking to generate the WIF mission and vision and goals for source water protection, related watershed monitoring, and Willamette River water rights management, and procuring consultant services to draft the vision and mission for board consideration. So that is the text of the scope of work that's in our annual work plan. So everything that I'm going to state here up to the questions that I have for the board, basically the background, kind of the explanation of what we're anticipating to cover in that text of the scope of work. So it starts with the 21st recital. There's a lot of recitals, Clark. The 21st recital of the WIP IGA prepares a starting point. So kind of what is the mission of this commission? And this is the best thing that I can get out of the IGA that starts that. Just to read it out loud, this commission sets forth the terms of joint ownership, operation, and management of the intake facilities in a prudent, economic, and efficient manner to provide water to the existing Willamette River Water Treatment Plant and the anticipated Willamette Water Supply System Water Treatment Plant, to preserve and protect the party's water rights, to support functioning of the intake facilities as a foundation of the water systems, and to support their commitment to watershed planning and management. So I think that's actually a pretty good start at a vision, mission, and goals for what we're trying to achieve. But as I presented this and shared this with the Operations Committee and the Finance Committee, we all agreed that we could use some refinement of this to really make sure that we're all in alignment in terms of what we're trying to achieve as a commission. So establishing a vision and mission for the WIP will provide multiple benefits as we see it. It provides clarity of purpose and direction for this multi-agency enterprise. It defines near-term operational objectives in terms of what should we really be doing in terms of water quality sampling, water rights reporting, and communications. And then also our long-term objectives regarding watershed protection efforts, water rights management, legislative advocacy. As you can imagine, we could take the role of just looking just past our intake or all the way up the watershed. And depending on what really is our mission, vision, and goals, you know, that really has some significant implications in terms of what sort of actions this body wants to take. And then determining the need for developing other partnerships. Clearly, as we expand our reach, other partnerships would be valuable to us. We recommend, one of the things that's going to cost us a little bit next fiscal year is getting a facilitator. We think it'd be valuable to have a facilitator guide us, an outside party basically to lead us in this effort. To drive the process over the next fiscal year, to consider WIF's local and regional goal, to provide regional and topical knowledge, develop consensus amongst the partners, and produce an actionable plan to meet the requirements of the WIF IGA. So what's the schedule that we're looking at? Well, this is kind of a rough outline of what it could be. And I'll just walk through this and argue that we might want to move a little faster than this. But we would look at July, August to procure the facilitator, September to March, a series of workshops to draft the vision and mission, the April WIF board meeting, this will be April 2021 WIF board meeting, a presentation of the draft vision and mission, May to June refinement of that, and then July 21, adoption of the vision and mission. So that's roughly kind of the outline that we would be looking at. If we took this sort of calendared approach, if we thought it would take this long, the only drawback of that is that we would lose basically a fiscal cycle to account for any of these recommendations. We wouldn't have the budget set up to then, now with these goals, now act on them until we got the new budget prepared. So just being transparent with you, that's one of the things that with the operations and finance committees, we're thinking through a little bit about whether this is the right schedule for us or not. So what I'm thinking, I guess me personally, I can speak to, so I'm thinking that this schedule feels about right, because frankly, I don't know how difficult these conversations are going to be. I don't know what we're going to get into in terms of agencies' perspectives in terms of the reach of what the WIF should be dealing with. If there's a lot of alignment, we could probably go a lot faster than this. If there isn't, then we're probably going to have to do some work to and some kind of reflecting to each of the agencies to inform us in terms of how to make good decisions. So I think this is a good guess for a successful schedule. But if it moves quicker, then we'd probably benefit by moving quicker than this so that we can account for it in our budgeting for the next fiscal year. So for the interactive part of this presentation, we got a few questions that I'd be curious to get your input on. The first is, do you support the WIF committees working on this in the next fiscal year? How would the board like to be engaged in this effort? It could be an in-depth involvement in each step as we go along. It could be limited involvement, such as kickoff meeting to establish main principles, mid-effort check-in, draft review and final approval, or just approval only, just basically hands-off approach, wait to get a recommendation. And so the review of the proposal at the April 21 board meeting, and then approval at the July 21 board meeting. So then finally, do you support hiring a professional facilitator to guide this effort? So those are three questions that we really appreciate your input on as we kind of finalize crafting this part of the annual work plan. And I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Well, I'll take a first whack at some of them, but I want to start answering your question by asking a question. I would imagine there are similar conversations going on with the Water Treatment Plant Commission and also with the governing agencies for the current water treatment plant that exists down there. Has there already been a discussion in a general sense that the WIF is the right locale for source water protection management, or do the treatment plant commissions feel like they have a responsibility for that, or are they basically deferring that to the WIF as the source of the raw water?
Okay.
Or is that still TBD?
No. Let me give a start, then Pastor Clark. So it's unfortunate we didn't have Wilson be here. When I shared this with Delora in Wilsonville, she was very much in favor of this, which to me, what I interpret from that, there's a need for it from Wilsonville's perspective. So I don't think Wilsonville, I'm a little shy of speaking for Wilsonville, but to me it seems like they're looking for this to be done. It's not currently being done. On the WWSS water treatment plant that we're currently in design, basically what we're looking at is the raw water is an input, and we're designing the treatment plant to account for it, but it's a pretty narrow perspective. It's what raw water quality data do we have? What sort of threats or challenges do we anticipate? You know, like sand bacteria, that's becoming an issue, and how are we designing to accommodate that? But it's not beyond that. However, I would say that when I'm in various public events, I get a lot of questions from the public as far as what are we doing? It's great that you're providing multi-barrier treatment and all these sorts of things, but what are you doing in the watershed? What are you doing to protect, to get the best quality water possible to the treatment plant? Because that's one of the best and frankly cheapest methods of treatment you can have. And frankly, we don't have a solid answer for that other than we are involved in all the ways that we can be in terms of current activities that are occurring in the basin.
So to get to the questions that you specifically asked here, I think Beaverton certainly would support the committees working on this, and I personally agree with you that should it go faster, that will be just fine. I'm trying to imagine where there could be a source of contention about this, but it could relate to the relationships of the agencies, it could relate to the relationship of the commissions, it could also relate to the magnitude of work required in order to do the job of it. We have some experience of that with the Joint Water Commission and the source water protection work going on there in a completely different watershed. There's some opportunity for it to be very expensive if bad things happen. I think that's one of the unknowns in this, but it absolutely makes sense for somebody to be looking at this, and for the WIF to be the place for it to start makes sense. I know that from experience with other situations, I think this board will, I believe, want to have at least the limited involvement. I think the approval only would not be the appropriate interaction, at least certainly not from my point of view. And I think we do need a professional facilitator, although I think it needs to be a subject matter expert. It needs to be somebody who's very familiar with source water protection and the elements involved there, so that the guidance can be based on experience in the field.
Well, sure. Just one point, and I think most folks behind believe were there when we had the WIF discussions. And so the only point is that the WIF is the one place where everybody has an interest, everybody's there. And at that point, you split to the Wilsonville treatment plant that has some parties or to the new one. So we had some very specific discussions about that's the point of diversion of the river. It's the place where everybody is already formed through this commission and the staff, and it's the best place that to deal with that source water protection, and particularly with something like Willamette, which has, you know, many, many, many variables that are going to impact water quality and regulatory issues. So we had specific discussions and decided, at least the staff recommended to you, this was the best place. We could look at some change in the future, but I think this makes perfect sense. I don't know if others might have thoughts on this.
So if you're saying this is the best place, are you saying that there should be enough involvement then with more of a recommendation for this?
I'm not touching the woods, but the involvement. But I think, I mean, it strikes me that the limited involvement is probably about the right place, but that's for me.
I agree.
Mr. Kresko, we have a comment coming from the back.
We did have quite a bit of conversation about coordination function among WIF and looking at the feasibility of what should the municipalities be doing, and I think that's a great place to start because of the size of the watershed. It's so big and you could spend a great deal of money, but where can you get the best bang for your buck was the discussion that we should start there at the WIF. And then if different parties from the treatment plans wanted to take on different efforts, that we could make that decision later, but there did seem to be a lot of interest that we would get the most cost savings by partnering together and the most coordination, because then we wouldn't be duplicating work. And so I think that was the start of the discussion, and a little bit of it was punting to the committees to kind of work in depth on that.
So I have a question just kind of about the role of the facilitator. Based on the schedule that you had on the previous slide, hiring in July through August, and then ending of the schedule of July 2021 with the adoption and vision of the mission. Would you anticipate the facilitator being contracted all the way through that year-long schedule?
I don't think so. I think the facilitators I've worked with before in similar situations, they serve a purpose for basically driving the conversation, making sure each entity is heard, make sure that everyone's speaking the same language and working towards common goals. And then they should have achieved their mission somewhere short of this. Frankly, I'm thinking live right now about this, but my guess is that if we had them on board in September to drive these meetings, and we have September through March, it'd be March at the latest, so it would be a contract from September through March.
Clarification, what is involvement of each staff compared to limited involvement look like?
So involvement of each step, from my perspective, is that we have to have the entire board present at every meeting. So there would be essentially near zero delegation from the board to staff in moving this forward. And so limited involvement would be we would craft check-ins of progress. So right now we have quarterly meetings. And so I think what we would need to do is find a way to inform you in between those quarterly meetings about the progress that we're making, so that as we came to the quarterly meetings, you would be already apprised of what's going on. I would do updates in terms of the progress that we're making, and then by the time we got to April, you would have these draft recommendations. From frankly, at that point, you'd be pretty familiar with them. So that's what I would see limited involvement being. And then there'd be a delegation. There'd be some hands-off nature to it from the board to staff that's actually working on this. Whereas if we did the in-depth involvement, there wouldn't be. The board would be present at all of our meetings.
Mm-hmm. quite a while.
Might not be very efficient.
Any additional questions?
I was just going to say that I support the facilitator and limited involvement, but concerned about the time schedule. You mentioned before that we would like to push this forward, so a lot of thought needs to be put into how we can provide limited input without slowing it down.
And I was going to, as part of a discussion, I would say that I would be for limited involvement as well, but if there was a way to do a hybrid where along the way we felt like there was a need, rather than waiting every quarter, to speed it up, that there was a way where we could call a meeting in advance, maybe give a 2-week notice or something like that, to have a meeting in advance. So I don't want to be micromanaging at every step, but I also want to be on a quarterly schedule where we're ahead of time, where if there's a need to get in, so I don't know what you call that, limited in-depth. option, but something where at least we have that flexibility, because if we have to wait till the next meeting, we're holding it up where we can get done in half a year quicker.
I think another consideration too is that each of us here at the commission can maintain contact with the staff in our agency who is working on this, and if yellow flags or red flags show up there, we can request maybe a special meeting of the commission or something of that sort as needed. Personally, I don't think with this subject matter, I don't think anticipate that happening, but I think we could comfortably live within our regular commission schedule, and maybe we might find a need to have one special meeting.
That seems to be the consensus from everybody. I think we can certainly eliminate the approval only and probably the in-depth involvement. I don't think either one of us or any of us here have a real appetite for being here all the time or being completely hands-off. So I think we could probably at least move forward with that idea of limited involvement. And I like the idea some flexibility in meetings. Since we are on the quarterly, we shouldn't be holding any kind of major decisions. Any other questions on this before we move forward?
We need to adopt the
right consensus is good enough now. Develop a plan for it.
And I'm sure that those all those other meetings will be available if any other member wanted to sit in.
So really appreciate the thoughtful input. This is exactly what I was hoping for. Frankly, I'm excited that you're excited about seeing us do this work. I think this is going to be really valuable for, frankly, the existence of the WIF and really what its purpose is. I think this is, frankly, on the Willamette Water Supply Program, one of the things that really drives us is our mission statement. Folks that put the effort in to create the mission statement for us has really clarified what our purpose is, what we're trying to achieve, by when, for what purposes. All these sorts of things really clarify so many things.
I want to offer another thought too. And at first I thought it was just going to be a humorous thought, but as I've been thinking about it, it's less humorous. You know, one of the issues in source water protection is that there are forces at work out there that sometimes don't protect water sources, and those can be natural sources and natural forces, and it can be human forces, and they can be corporate forces, and all sorts of those things. And part of the work of source water protection is engagement with those forces to try to change some of their behaviors, or change some of their practices, or change some of their outcomes. We may want to think about whether the name Willamette Intake Facilities really carries the heft necessary to engage effectively with some of those entities. Just something to think about for the future. Willamette Intake Facilities. Maybe something different.
Wow. That's, yeah, okay.
Just a thought.
Appreciate that. So, as Clark mentioned, this is exactly the input we were hoping for. We will work now with the committees to put some meat on the bones here for this annual work plan, this element of it. So when we come back at our April meeting, I'll present to you in detail what we intend to accomplish. So, again, thank you for your input.
What's next?
Oh, so continuing on with our annual work plan regarding just a tweak on what we're planning to accomplish with our finance administration. We'll be finalizing the financial procedures for the WIF Commission. The schedule for completing annual work plan and budget January 2nd, the first draft was emailed to the Operation Finance Committee. On the 16th, Operation Finance Committee met to review and edit the draft. Then again, on the 15th, we delivered to the Management Committee, and then at the end of March, the final recommended version. And that concludes that agenda topic. Thank you.
I know we've had quite a bit of discussion on that. Any other questions or comments?
That's some really good looking stuff. I think we're
constantly looking to the future on that. So it's excellent. Thank you for bringing that to our attention. The next item on the information item is legislative update. Mr. Carey, Dave Kraska once again. It's the Dave Kraska show.
I apologize, it's still me. So found out last night Mr. Carey is not well, so I'm going to give you his presentation tonight. I'm going to do the best job I can with it, but I appreciate your patience with me, because I'm just learning as I go. So Joel provides his quarterly legislative updates, and as I was going through this information, frankly, I'm impressed at the amount of work that he does and that this group does. So just a reminder, HABs, you're gonna hear that a lot, harmful algal blooms. And then the new acronym is cyanohabs. So it's even a subset of the habs that we talk about. Joel is part of this legislative group that's working on and cyanohabs is their focus. In 2019, this group had 14 meetings to evaluate legislative goals and recommendations. And as attached to the staff report here, there are specific legislative recommendations, long-term recommendations, and then there are also a response to the 100-year vision. There was a letter that was written regarding the 100-year vision, and I'll cover each of those in very summary form before I address any questions. So regarding the specific recommendations, there are four of them. The first one is to prepare a comprehensive list of existing programs. So essentially what we're trying to achieve there is understanding all the programs that are already existing in the state on this topic, find out is there overlap or are there gaps and where those need to be filled in. Basically, kind of do an effort to try to get some efficiency there and make sure there's broad coverage. Recommendation number two was to create an expert advisory council, basically state-known experts to address these issues when they come up. Recommendation number three was funding for additional equipment, seasonal staff, and supplies. DEQ has kind of, I'll say in an ad hoc nature, been providing cyanotoxin testing for various utilities, and this would basically formalize it and give it the oomph it needs in order to do the job that the state really needs it to do. And the final fourth near-term recommendation is funds for the outreach communicator coordinator for small utilities. So those of us in the more metropolitan areas and developed areas, better funded, more communication, more outreach, and we can address these things together and frankly individually. Not so much with the small utilities. And so this is outreach to those utilities to provide them the resources they need in order to be just as effective as public health protection in this regard as we are. Regarding long-term recommendations for 2021, there are nine of them. I'll just go over them very briefly. The first one is to create a clearinghouse of cyanohabs related data and outreach materials. Number two is to address funding needed for key programs. Number three is to create and or update comprehensive set of communication and educational tools. Number four is develop enhanced communication strategies. Number five, provide more general education on cyanohabs for the public. Number six is to standardize the state's approach and response to cyanohabs. Number seven is to develop stronger partnerships to help cyanohabs response. Number eight is to collect more data. And number nine is to identify additional resources to replace federal funding that's currently used by OHA. So that's a mouthful, but it's a lot of work that this group is getting its arms around, and really the identified need for public health protection from cyanohabs. There's a draft bill for all of this that's also included in your packet. There's a budget request attachment, and then the last attachment here is a letter to Oregon Water Vision from this collective, League of Oregon Cities, OEWU, and SDAO. And really what this letter is about, if you read through it, it's basically congratulating Oregon Water Vision for their work in crafting the vision for the state. But really what the focus is here is to not just, is to encourage them to not just look at the vision for the state water supply, but also the practicalities of it. The funding of this vision, the actual implementation of this vision, things of that nature, basically put some reality on really this vision that they're creating to make sure it's realistic and implementable. So that's as, I think, as much as I have to share on Joel's presentation, but I'd be glad to take any questions you might have.
Understanding the position that Mr. Kraska is in, any questions that you might have for him?
Well, I have a comment. Oregon's 100-year water vision, that takes Crystal Bond to a whole new level.
it sure does.
Yeah. Oh, wow. It's ambitious.
A lot of good information.
Yeah, and we always appreciate the work that he does. He always has this very good, keeping in touch with Salem is always going to be really important for us.
I'd like to add one comment that when I read through this, I would like to thank and congratulate those members of this group who participated in one of the organizations that wrote this letter for pointing out the sort of parallelism between the integrated water resources strategy and the vision. So hopefully the work on the vision will build on previous work as opposed to starting afresh in too many areas.
All right, so moving on to the last information item, just letting you know the next meeting is going to be April 27th of this year. It's back at the Tiger Public Works building where we had our October meeting, I believe. So. And then there was, moving on, yes, thank you, to number six, communications and non-agenda items. There was a brief discussion prior to the meeting, Mr. Kraska, Jagazi had on LC 199. Is this something you would like to discuss?
Okay. So over the last week or so, folks, LOC, SDO, have become aware of what's called Legislative Council Draft 199. It's a proposed bill that will be assigned a House bill number in the next week or so. But it's a proposed bill by the American Chemical Society to essentially require that all local entities who contract, so that's all of us, not have any restrictive provisions in their standards for construction that would preclude the use of plastic pipe, essentially. So essentially there's a report that they have generated. Seems to have a lot of errors in it, but it essentially makes a case that there are exclusionary practices being conducted by various municipalities so that they don't get an opportunity to have their pipe considered in projects. I think personally, I oppose it. I think that the way that the purchasing and utility community is lining up is that they will oppose it too, because we need to have the flexibility to develop our own standards and make sure that what we put in the ground is going to be cost effective, meet the life cycle issues that we're looking for, and you know, meet the standards that we're trying to achieve. Everything, our rules have always provided that folks have the opportunity to submit things on an or equal basis. So there's always an opportunity to have an alternate type of pipe considered. But it seems to me that we want to make sure that we always meet at least BWWA standards or APWA standards or, you know, ASTM or ANSI or, you know, whatever all those other acronyms are. And also to make sure that our design teams have the ability to spec something that they believe is going to work best and give us the best bang for our buck and for our citizens. So I think that this bill is going to be pretty hotly contested. I think the takeaway for you right now is you may be contacted. You know, we've already had commissioners contacted by a couple of different groups that are supporting this effort. saying you should consider this, this is a cost-saving measure, and essentially implying that there's an unfairness being practiced on them. You know, I think the best thing to do is to be aware of it. I don't know if they'll try to do anything other than email you or telephone you, but in any event, you're probably going to be contacted in the near future.
Can you let us know when House Bill number is assigned to it?
I will
communicate with our Salem representative.
I will do that. I may already have it. At least there was some, I may already have it. There was some speculation today that this was the number it was going to be, but I don't want to put bad information out either, but I can at least do it.
My 30 years of laboratories has taught me something. Materials can all of a sudden not be a good deal depending on what the feds do. And so restricting or limiting our options, I don't like it.
Do we have any other questions or comments on this? And appreciate you bringing it to our attention so we don't get blindsided by somebody reaching out to us on this. Do we have any other non-agenda items to discuss this evening? Seeing none, I think we can go ahead and adjourn the meeting. Thank you, everybody.